One. Hello and welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with your co-host Greg Theron
and Gillian Davis. How is everyone doing this week? So we had a couple of episodes where it was just me and Greg, and so but now we're back with another fantastic guest on our podcast today. So we have got the amazing Lisa Newport, who is a style consultant, and we invited Lisa along just to give us her thoughts around about obviously styling, your expertise in that, but also around about how women maybe use clothes to hide how they really feel about themselves. And certainly my point of view, I love the psychology around kind of clothes and colours that we tend to wear. And maybe you can dispel a few myths around that as well for us, Lisa. So, but first of all, you know, give us a little bit of background about what you do really and how you kind of ended up where you are today.
Oh, my story.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me on. It's lovely to be here. So I do appreciate it. But yeah, I got into doing what I do now years and years ago. My very first, I'll tell you right from the beginning, but my first ambition really was to be a special effects makeup artist.
Okay.
And I went into makeup. I studied makeup, cosmetic makeup. Once I'd left school, but then realised I've got a dodgy hip, so I've got mobility problems, I walk with a limp, and I realised that it probably wasn't the best job for me being on my feet all the time, so I kind of veered off then into textiles and fashion, and studied textiles and fashion, got my degree, worked as a designer for a while, then went into college lecturing, teaching other people how to design, until my son was born. And when my son was born, I was like, oh, I don't want to leave him. I don't want to have somebody else looking after him. So I then started in Party Plan, which brought in my love of makeup. I did that for about 7 or 8 years until he was at junior school. Met Richard Branson several times because I worked for the Virgin V Cosmetic Company, which was wonderful. And then I thought, well, I was getting a bit bored and the company changed. And I was sort of like, oh, I should go back into teaching. And they were advertising at the prison around the corner from me for an art teacher. So I started teaching art at the prison, then became a prison education manager, which was totally not creative at all, apart from doodling in meetings. And I ended up being quite ill mentally, had a breakdown, sideswiped me, completely wiped me off my feet. And I thought, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. So what can I do that takes all my things that I've really loved before into consideration? And that's how I ended up creating my business. So I invested some more money into colour analysis training and style training, which I'd always been really fascinated by since the 80s, but never really gone down the training route. I'd done it unofficially with friends and when I was teaching. But yeah, so it's kind of like that's how it happened. That's how I came about to be doing what I'm doing. And I'm really passionate about helping women look good so that they feel good, so they basically feel more confident. So that's when people say, what do you sell? I say I sell confidence. I just use colour and clothes to do that, because my self-esteem was impacted so much during the time when I was ill and when I was going through I've sort of suffered from depression. So my mental health has been quite poor for quite a long time, it was. And I got to a really sort of sorry state, really, where I was looking at myself in the mirror and couldn't look at myself, you know, from here downwards, because I felt fat and frumpy, you know, I couldn't look at myself. And so it's all sort of wrapped up in that, really. So this is why I do what I do, because I want other people to feel good. So mm-hmm. That's in a nutshell. So sorry, I waffled on a bit.
That's an amazing story. You're like, wow. I was like, tell
There's
me more.
Chapters, isn't there? More.
Okay. How long have we got?
Awesome.
So yeah, so that's how I got into it. So my and the way that I work, and what I'm really, really keen to do, I'm on a mission to sort of get the whole colour and style industry out to the masses, which is why I run online courses. It's not just something that's elitist and for people who've got money and celebrities. You know, we can all benefit from feeling better about ourselves with our clothes, because what we wear is so intertwined with how we feel about ourselves. And So it's that chicken and egg thing, you know, with you guys and Greg talking about women hiding in baggy clothes and things. It's that whole, if you're feeling crap about yourself, you know, and you sort of hiding in your clothes, if you can wear clothes that make you feel better, then you might start to feel a bit better about yourself. Then you might be more inclined to do something about it as your self-esteem and your self-worth grows. Then you're more inclined to look after yourself a bit better. So it's that chicken and egg kind of thing. And if you can hear the grunting, I'm really sorry because my dog's under my chair and she's decided to start licking her feet and it's really grunting. Sorry.
Don't worry, it's all good.
So yeah, that's sort of where I, you know, come from in terms of what I do and how I do it.
Yeah, and I think you talk to a lot of things there, Lisa, really around about, you know, like women that get into that kind of really, you know, that dark place of just not liking what they see in the mirror. And I hear that a lot from women, you know. Yeah. It's often a comment that I hear is just hate this.
Yeah.
And I actually have had women do that to me, you know, themselves. And it's kind of, you almost want to, I just want to hug people and do that. Yeah. So, you know, and it's that sort of thought that I guess can spiral then into more severe mental.
Yeah, it can. And you know, and the makeover shows make a really big deal of it, don't they? You know, the how to look good naked, and they have people standing there crying in front of mirrors and really sort of break them down to, so it's a big reveal and this big ta-da at the end. And I'm fascinated by them. I can't stop watching them, but then I'm shouting at the telly and I'm kind of like, I don't do before and after things because I just feel that is, if somebody's feeling a bit rubbish about themselves and wants to feel better, then why would you sort of parade them as part of your business model, parade them and go, oh, look how rubbish she looked, and then she worked with me and look how brilliant I've made her look. That's just not where I come from at all. So I don't do before and afters. I've got case studies which my clients, you know, volunteer, which is a different kettle of fish, but it's quite often ladies who work with me, women who work with me, don't come to me because they feel depressed. They come to me because they're a bit frustrated. They're sort of, but then when we dig a little bit into the psychology, some are, some not, you know, I'm not saying everybody who works with me has got body issues, but it's that level of frustration about feeling good and that whole sort of, oh, I'm going out with my friends, oh, what shall I wear? And then they start trying things on, or they go and buy something new, they chuck it in the basket at Sainsbury's because it's like they feel if they get something new, it'll make them feel better. And then it's not quite right for them. So then they put it on and it doesn't make them feel great. It's just, oh, well, it's new, it'll do. And then they end up, I'd rather not go out. You know, it's like stressful. Getting dressed is stressful. And it's kind of like, if you know what colours suit you and what styles and shapes suit you and what you're trying to say with your clothes, if you can create like a recipe. Mm-hmm. And once you've got your own recipe that's just right for you, you know, your little tweaks and twists and things, then that makes you feel better. So it's kind of that whole package. And people don't know that people like me exist a lot of the time because you don't think, oh, I'm feeling a bit rubbish, what shall I wear? Oh, I'll Google an image consultant. You know, you don't do it. Normal, you know, in inverted commas, everyday ordinary people don't think, oh, I'll see a stylist. You know, the most that people get to is a personal shopper.
Yeah.
In Debenhams or John Lewis. And then sometimes it works. But at the end of the day, they're shop assistants who are there to make you spend money and get you commission. They're not necessarily going to give you proper advice or even know, you know, what colours are right or whatever if they've only been working in the shop, you know. So it's
you've just drawn a nice little analogy for me. You've just given me the perfect analogy to go to this angle. So you talked about the personal shoppers. I always get baffled about them. I'm like, yeah, how do they work anyway?
Yeah.
But I guess you're like, you're kind of us in the kind of fitness, nutrition, mindset space. And then you've got slimming consultants who are potentially the personal shoppers.
Yeah.
You mean that analogy, and I just let me go to that.
So yeah, tell me more about that. So, you know, for me, my passion is to really sort of, I suppose I work as a coach in terms of clothes, rather than, and a mentor, rather than being a consultant. I really don't like the term image consultant, but it's the thing I have to use because it's kind of the nearest thing to what I do. I do work with people with the clothes and colours, but more in a coaching way. It's very much about helping them find the solutions that are right for them, which is how you guys work in terms of, you know, health and fitness. So yeah, it's not about a cookie cutter approach and, oh, if you do this, you know, it's right for you. You know, like with all the slimming, you know, the diet world, it's kind of, yeah, there's loads of different diets. They all work. They all help you lose weight. But what happens at the end of when you come off the diet, it's that whole, you need to make changes that, you know, that are sustainable. And that's what I help people do with their clothes. I don't do makeovers because that's the same as going on a diet. You know, it's kind of when you come off the diet at the end of the makeover, then what happens 2 days later when, you know, Karen, who's had a makeover and had a hair done and a makeup done by the makeup artist for the television program or the magazine shoot, what happens when she's on the school run? You know, and she doesn't know, she hasn't learned anything. She's just got these outfits that she was given, and it's like, well, they're not suitable for nipping down to Asda, you know. And it's that, so it's kind of, that's the gap that I fill. And help people. I like to teach people so that they understand, so then that they're making informed choices, yeah, you know, a more sustainable way of getting dressed, really.
And I think
that away.
One big thing that you touched on as well, Lisa, was around about, it's kind of the perception that it's an extravagant thing to do, isn't it, to help you? But at the same time, you're talking about helping people almost make their choices easier, narrow their choices down as well. Yeah. You know,
so one of my hashtags that I use on social media is buy less, wear more. So yeah, it's that whole thing of, so you know, if you invest money with me, you know, say you spend 50 quid a month on average on clothes over the year, and you could invest that money with me over 3 months on my online course, save that money, and then it will pay for itself in the 3 months that that you're working with me. But also what you learn then will help you then make choices so that you're buying clothes that don't end up in the wardrobe, never worn, you know, that are only worn once or twice, or things that you try on and you're like, you've bought it, you've kept it, it was all right, but it doesn't feel right. So it's about understanding why that doesn't work for you. What is it about that? It's because it's X, Y, Z, and it's for that kind of style personality where I'm in this group, you know. So it's about teaching people this simple formula. I'm not saying it's easy, because yeah, you know, I've done a lot of work to get to my level of expertise. It's not easy, but there are simple steps that you can follow. So yeah, it's then when you've got the clothes, because you like them all more, you wear them, so you ultimately save time and money because you can go to your wardrobe and pull things out that you know are going to make you feel good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, sorry, Gillian, I think I was just going to ask a question. So what if I came to you and I said, hey, help me, I'm with terrible hoodies all the time. Where would we start?
The thing we would start with, Greg, I've got a quiz, style personality quiz, which is my sort of starting point. We would chat. So I would want you to do the style personality quiz, because straight away that would give me an insight into your likes and dislikes, your preferences, where you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we would talk about the things that you need your clothes to do. What, you know, what lifestyle do you have, and how much of your life is spent in casual clothes, how much in smart casual, that kind of thing. So we'd work out what your priorities are. Then we would look at, so we've got your style personality. Now it's slightly different with men, because there's not as much choice, because like with women, you can wear dresses, shirts, trousers, skirts, you know, and different shapes of trousers. You know, wide leg trousers might suit one body type, skinny trousers suit another. With men, it's much more difficult because there are trousers. and there are trousers that are in fashion, so you can't, you know, it would be difficult for us now if, you know, oh well, you need a pair of flared trousers, Greg, you know, because of your body shape. It's tricky. So yeah. So we'd look at, you know, perhaps what you wanted to attract attention to in terms of your body and what you want to detract from. So then that would determine then how you wear clothes and also colours that suit you. So we would look at the colours and work out which group of colours were better for you and make your skin look better and your eyes look, you know, more sparkly and so on. And then take all of that and put it sort of together into your recipe, if you like. So that's, but there's a lot of talking. And especially with women, not so much men. I tend not to market to men. I do work with men, but I market to sort of women who are 40 and above. That's where I've sort of niched. But what happens with women, when we do the talking bit, there's always hang-ups from when they were, sometimes from a teenager, you know. I remember one client who'd never worn a skirt in 30 odd years because her dad had told her she'd got tree trunk legs when she was like 14. You know, and stuff like that really sticks. And we have these like self-image demons. I call them Sid. He sits on our shoulder.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, Sid's there on the shoulder and just, you know, chipping away when you're not feeling like, you think, I'll try something new. And then your teenage daughter goes, that's a bit weird for you, Mum, you know. And then you're like completely, oh, I won't then. I'll put that back in the cupboard, you know. It's too. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we, and I like to find out what people have got, you know. There's no, I'm not sort of going to look at somebody and go, oh, well, she's got fat arms, so we need to cover her arms up, because if her arms are not an issue to her, me projecting, you know, my issue with my fat arms or whatever, you know, it's that kind of thing. So I work out what the focus is of the session, what they want to get out of it. So yeah, that's how I work with everybody. So it's a cup of tea first.
Yeah, I think you're right. You have to talk through these things, and you know, Gillian will do the same thing with her clients. I'll do the same with mine. The talking bit and the exploratory and the assessment is probably the most important part of the whole process.
It certainly is. If you work from a coaching way, you know, you've got to find out what people want and where they're coming from and what their aim is. You know, because you can't assume anything. This is why I think, you know, if you go to a personal shopper and you get something that is great, then that's quite more of a fluke, because you can't possibly have the time to delve into the whys and wherefores and the psychology around why they don't like their legs and all of that just by popping into, you know, for an hour into John Lewis kind of thing. So I think
that's the difficult part, is for people to, you know, what's the outcome? What are they looking to get out of it? And the end point, if you like, because, even being asked that question, they're like, I just want to look good.
Yeah, I think usually, and then that's where your skill comes in as a coach, to sort of probe, and that's where my education background comes in, you know, having taught for so many years in a college environment, that teasing out the answers rather than just going, oh, you should do this with your design, or, you know, you've got to get people thinking and thinking about the process, about why they've made these decisions around making these marks or whatever. So that's where my teaching has really, really helped me in terms of the coaching side of what I do. So but yeah, you know, and I think the thing is, once people decide to, you know, I do little sort of 15-minute discovery chats, you know, let's have a chat and see how I can help you kind of thing, because that's important to me in terms of that there's got to be that connection as well with the individual, because there are lots of people like you guys, you know, there are lots of people doing what you do on paper, but it's about, there has to be that personal connection. Mm-hmm. Because if you're, you know, not in tune with that person, you know, I look quite different to a lot of people who do the kind of work that I do. You know, quite often I've got purple hair or blue hair or pink hair, and it's spiky, and, you know, and I am a larger lady, for want of a better phrase. So it's kind of, I don't fit that sort of norm. And if people are looking for somebody who's going to help them look, you know, very classic and corporate and, you know, sort of fit into a certain mold, then I can help them with that. But I'm probably not the best person because that's not how I am. I'm very much about individuality and helping people really express who they are through their clothes. So if they've got to conform in a certain way, I help them conform but still with their own personal touches. So it's a little bit, it's got to be the right fit in terms of who you are.
I have to say, Lisa, that was what kind of, because like I've done Lisa's 5-day challenge and I came into it, and that's what kind of, I knew a lot of people that do similar things to you, and that was really one thing that did draw me into it, was there's lots that are all about the glamour. There's lots of do the eyelashes, the big hair, you know, blonde hair and curls. All this,
you know, and the heels and the laboon, yeah, heels, and, you know, all that.
Not me. Very superficial to my view anyhow. But
that's, that's okay if that's how they want to present themselves. And then we have a perception, because you're sending out messages with how you look, with your clothes, color and clothes, because we make snapshot, like millisecond decisions about people with how they look. So it's kind of like, how are you giving out the right messages with how you look about how you want to be perceived, you know, in terms of your business and everything. It's kind of like, if you want to be perceived in a certain way, if you want to be seen as warm and approachable, then please don't wear a high contrast jacket and shirt, because you won't be, you know. And it's that kind of stuff as well, but it's horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and like I say, I'm more about helping, in inverted commas, ordinary people feel better than ordinary, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, it was good. Good thing you did my challenge. And then you went on to do the Sush Your Style program, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So there was a point a little while ago where Gillian was like, doing some funky colours. Was that when you were...
I think that was during the 5-day challenge. I was showing up in different colours.
I was like, what's going on here? I can see something going on. That was cool.
In the 5-day challenge, it was sort of like, wear this one day and wear this another, and sort of teaching people how to, even without having a colour analysis reading, how to make the most of wearing colour so that it makes your skin look good and your hair look good. And,
nice.
That was great.
Yeah, I know. I was impressed. I was like, go Gillian, check it out. Gillian.
Instead of wearing a plain grey t-shirt. It was fascinating, actually. I did love that. So my question though, Lisa, for you, is there like kind of, you know, it's certainly in our industry, there's always the myths, so, you know, the myth busters and that. Is there anything that you could share with us around kind of the biggest common misconceptions that maybe women have around about clothes or colours or styling? Or
one of the big things is that black is slimming. People hide in slimming, I always put it in inverted commas, slimming black. Yeah. There is a little bit of science behind it. So in as much as, because it's a dark colour, it absorbs light, but other dark colours will also do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, wearing something that is shiny or has a sheen to it that is black is just, that is not going to do anything, because that will attract the light and highlight an area rather than, you know, sort of dip it out. And black's not a great colour for the majority of people. In terms of wearing it near your face, because it casts shadows. So the whole colour analysis thing really is about, you know, when you were a kid and you put a buttercup under your chin and it sort of like reflected the yellow. Did you never do that, Greg? You're looking a bit bemused.
Yeah.
You used to always do it at school, and you put a buttercup and they say, oh, you like butter, you know, if it sort of, you got yellow under your chin. and it's essentially, that's what colour analysis is, because it's about what you're wearing here around this portrait area, you know, sort of across your décolletage, and it's being what's being reflected up onto your face. Mm-hmm. And that helps, that can change the shadows and the way that you know, you can look older if you get more shadows and things. So black's not good because it does create shadows. It's only good on a sort of small group of people. So it's kind of like, get a step away from the black people, step away from the black.
But it's, that's your first
it's
thing.
So tricky with the, you know, what's in the shops. It's hard.
Yeah, it's such a dominant color, isn't it? That's true.
You know, you're not going to go and try this buttercup thing and see if it works. I don't know if it'll work on me, but you know.
It would still, yeah. Have you got? Does your beard go right under your chin? No. You should be. You would get a reflection. Okay. It might not be that bright on your skin, okay, because your skin's quite a dark tone. It might not be bright.
Right.
But it would work.
I'm gonna try. People listening to this, I hope you try this too. Let us know.
It's a revelation for you there, Greg.
Like learning some deep stuff.
Yeah, the slimming black is like a big thing. And then you know, I wrote a blog recently about dressing intense. And I know sort of Greg's already sort of talked about this, about people wearing baggy clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can, if you wear the right shape clothes that are fitted properly, that for your body type, then you can look much slimmer than you do by hiding in you know, something that's too big and baggy. So, and that's a real thing. And then one client I know, she was buying things like two sizes too big because she felt self-conscious. And it was kind of, so I took her shopping and it was kind of like, we bought her stuff that fitted her properly. And she looked like she'd lost about 4 stone straight away,
yeah.
You know, because the clothes were fitting better. Yeah. So, you know, and like I say, I'm a bigger girl. I've done it in the past when I felt, you know, when my mental health wasn't great and I was like hiding in baggier clothes. And I look at pictures of me now and I'm heavier now, or maybe the same weight as I was then, but I look a lot lighter because I'm wearing things that are more flattering for my figure. So, you know, that's the thing. Don't hide in big baggy stuff. Learn what's right for your body type. That would be my,
Is that almost a learned behavior in some respects? Because you kind of see everyone else do it, so you almost adopt this, I'm going to wear black and two sizes bigger. Is that a learned thing or is it a psychological thing?
It's a bit of both, because the thing is as well, if you are restricted to, and we're going for this plus size shops, you know, if you're restricted to where you can buy larger size clothes from, they're catering for the masses. You're very limited with where you can shop. And that when you go into that sort of different world of clothes shopping, there is so much black. It's very prevalent. So it's hard, you know. I struggle because I try not to, black does actually suit me, and it suited me better before my hair went grey. But it's one of those things where I try not to buy black or wear black as much as I possibly can these days. But it's really hard. It's really hard, even when you know what you're looking for, trying to buy things that aren't black. It's tricky. So there's that side of it. So if you go to, if you have to go to Evans or somewhere like that to buy your clothes, then probably half the shop is black and baggy.
Yep. So you know, it's environment and learn, yeah, and psychological.
Yeah. And then people, you know, get very conscious of the lumps and bumps and want things to hide them. So instead of buying something that's fitted somewhere and then skimming, it's just easy because it's what's available is to just buy a big tent and you wear that and it sort of makes you think, oh, well, it's slimming black and it's hiding my lumps and bumps. So when actually it's just probably adding bulk, making you look bigger.
Yeah.
So there you go, ladies. Start to reconsider your black wardrobes. Get a bit of colour. Well, if anything, if you are feeling that way, you know, just by putting some colour back into your wardrobe will just, it is a mood enhancer anyhow.
Yeah, and that's another, you know, that's another side to it, you know, and this is why, so I used to wear a lot of black, and when I was working in the education, when I was a prison education manager, obviously I had to have a certain level of gravitas about me, and I wouldn't have felt comfortable wearing the kind of clothes that I wear now in that environment, just because of, you know, I would have, the perception of me would have not been how I wanted to be perceived in terms of being serious and, you know, sort of, because it was quite a big, you know, it was a lot of responsibility in that role. So it's that whole thing about what I know is kind of like, I'm trying not to wear black, but if I do wear black, I have to wear a coloured scarf or just something that has got colour with it, because I feel really, it makes me feel really drab and quite somber and quite depressed, you know, just wearing all black. Whereas some people think it sort of looks quite sophisticated. A lot of designers always wear black, you know, in the fashion world. It's like, you know, when you wear Devil Wears Prada, you know, that sort of, they're all there in the black. But
I feel like I need to go through my wardrobe now.
Yeah, you do that.
Karl Lagerfeld, he's very much, he was always in a black suit and black and white, wasn't he? So very.
Yeah.
And that's very much about that sort of, the black and white together, you know, it very much is about authority. That's that our perception is about authority. So if you want to be taken seriously or want to exert power and authority, then it's, you know, wearing high contrast like black and white is, you know, if you think about judges and police uniforms and prison officers, like, you know, it's always about the black and the white together. We say boys in blue, but actually police uniforms, they're formal uniforms are black and white, so you know, it's that's about that contrast. So if you were in a counsellor wanting to be seen as being warm and approachable, then you know, it's like, don't wear the high contrast stuff and the formal stuff, because you're sending out a message straight away that you're not as approachable as if you wore something. You can still wear a jacket, but wear one in, you know, a softer colour with a softer coloured shirt and not as much contrast to it, and that will make you appear more approachable. So yeah, I love it. You can tell, can't you?
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? So,
I'm just going to pick up on, so you touched on something, we spoke about it just before we started recording, so that this blog you're writing about the plus size debate, just tell us a bit more about that. I'm intrigued about your thoughts.
So, well, about 5 years ago, the first time I sort of wrote this blog, and I'm updating it at the moment. I'm going to publish it later today. I just wanted to see if people's attitudes had changed over the 5 years. So I'm asking the question, what size do you consider plus size to be? And the general consensus tends to be around size 20 and above for women to be plus size. Now, start at size 14. And in the modelling world, plus size models are size 10.
Wow.
Right? And then you can, depending on where you buy your clothes from, you can be a size 16 in one shop and a size 20 in another. There is no standardisation. Yeah. But in terms of, you know, the perception of where does plus size start, most people are comfortable saying a size 20. There are a lot of people who aren't comfortable even talking about it at all, don't like the terminology, don't, you know, it's kind of a negative term. However, so this is something to food for thought here. If you look up plus in the dictionary, it's a very positive term. It's all about assets and things being bigger and better and bolder, but you know, it's a very sort of seen as being, you know, plus this, plus that. It's kind of like a real sort of it has positive connotations, whereas in the, you know, it used to be called outsize in the olden days when I was growing up. Plus size, it used to be like Evans, the outsize shop, you were outsized, so you're like out of normal range. So there's all of that. And then there's the whole argument, isn't there? Can you be big and yet still be healthy? Or just because you're big, does that make you unhealthy? Just because you're obese, you know, are you automatically unhealthy? You know, or because you're slim, are you automatically healthy? So there's a whole load of stuff around it. But in terms of plus size, you know, there's loads of things that people who are larger call themselves fat or chubby or this or that, you know, and like in America, it's called thick. You're thick if you're in a.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, well, I prefer being, I'd rather be termed, you know, plus size is better than being called thick, because thick in England means you're stupid, doesn't it? You know, so.
It depends on how you use the word thick. I won't say any more on the subject.
So, but there's the whole, you know, do we call ourselves curvy or voluptuous or whatever? And there's a whole thing, you know, in terms of like ectomorphs and mesomorphs and endomorphs. You can't change. If you've got a curvy body shape, that's your genetic. Even however much weight you lose, you still got that preposition to be, you know, rounder at the edges. And so there's so much about it. So yeah, trying to keep it into 1,000 words will be hard.
it's the
whole debate. Whereas so even people so people who are not plus size feel very uncomfortable, and we were talking about this, Greg, weren't we, where is it because it's kind of like body shaming, is it that?
Yeah.
Or is it, you know, because if we just ignore it and we sort of it becomes the norm, you know, there's all this stuff with the government at the moment, isn't there? These mixed messages about, you know, get healthy, lose weight, but you know, here you go, you can go to McDonald's and get it half price. You know, what's that all about?
Yeah,
you know, that's another conversation completely, yeah, isn't it?
But you started.
It's you know, what do you call it? You know, I know that if I'm, although saying that, I bought something that wasn't plus size for the first time in years the other day. I have lost some weight recently. But yeah, you know, I know if I want to find some clothes to wear, I need to Google plus size clothes, because that's the accepted term, whether we like it or not. That is the term that is used within the fashion industry to denote a certain range of sizes. So yeah.
Why don't we just call it size 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, just
which, continue it.
You know, and the research shows that the average woman, the average woman in the UK is a size 16 and 11 and a half, 5'3" and 11 and a half stone.
Mm.
So that's the statistics, which gives you a BMI of something like, I think, 27 point something.
Yeah.
So if we're then looking at BMI, then that means that the average woman in the UK is overweight, because the BMI should be under 25. You know, so it's, and Dawn French years ago brought out a clothing line and it was called 1647, because 47% of women in the UK are over a size 16 and above. So it's kind of like, if you look at the shops that are catering for, you know, the demographic that is plus size in e-commerce, there are so few shops compared to all the other clothes shops that stop at a size 16 or stop at a size 18.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a minefield, really. Basically, you need to be a size 14 and you can shop anywhere, because you can shop in the normal, in inverted commas, shops, and you can shop in plus size shops if you wanted to.
You can't. Because when you go to the shop,
they're all different.
That size is never there anyway.
Yeah, and it depends. You know, there was a whole video blog, and I think a few years ago, where there was a girl trying on, I think she was size 12, and she went and bought jeans from all these different brands, all size 12, and then putting them on, you know, and it was like some were too big, some were too small, you know, and it was like, well, they're all size 12, so it's all a bit of a nonsense, really.
Yeah,
the whole sizing, you know, if you don't like what it says on the back of the tag, cut the tag out. That's what I say.
There you go. Absolutely. Because because there's a lot that can get really caught up on having to go and take a different size because you're in a different shop, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's not about what the tag says, what the label says. It's about whether it fits you well, whether it looks nice. So, you know, if it's a size 20 or a size 12, it doesn't matter if it fits you and you look good in it. If the label is that much, it's like the scales, you know. And when I was listening to your recording about people getting on the scales and they're not bothered about all these other non-scale victories, but it's like what the scales say. And I totally get that, you know, as a yo-yo dieter for many years, you know, I get that. But it's about that, you know, if the tag bothers you, cut the tag out. Don't be bogged down by what the label says, because there's so, you know, there's so much disparity across the fashion industry. It doesn't make sense.
It's interesting, because a lot of the clients I get to, the trigger is often their clothes size. It's actually never, it's actually hardly ever their weight. You know, maybe in a few cases, but often it's the, oh my God, I mean, I have to wear a size 16 or 18 now. This can't go on. This has to stop. And I'm like, okay, cool. But it's just interesting how, I guess from my point of view, it's the clothes size that drives that I need to change. But then we assess about the weight.
Yeah.
Way back down. It's really weird. It's,
yeah. And I suppose if you're used to shopping, because most of us, because of our style personalities, shop in particular shops, we sort of like, oh well, I like going there because they always have X, and you know, I like going there, they're more likely to be standard sizes within the shop
that
you go into. So if you're used to wearing a size 12 in Miss Selfridge and then you need a size 14 in Miss Selfridge, then you think, you know, am I putting weight on, sort of thing. So that could be a gauge. But, you know, I've got things ranging from a size 16 to a size 26 that all fit me. So that's like five sizes. It's about the cut and the fabric. You know, I know, you know, my busts are disproportionately large to the rest of my body. So I know that if I buy something to fit my bust in fabric that isn't stretchy, it's going to be really big everywhere else. Whereas if I buy stretchy fabric, it will fit me at the top and be fit me everywhere else as well. So it's nonsense, really. It is about fit, what fits you. And, you know, I don't know, and you're the experts on this, but, you know, like I say, I've lost weight recently. And my body shape has changed completely, more proportionately to I've not sort of lost weight all evenly all over. I've lost like 9 inches off my waist. And that's massive. So my body shape has completely changed. So that means that opens up new doors for me in terms of what styles and things I can wear, because I've lost that weight where all my weight was around my middle. And that apple sort of shape and all around my middle. And the way that I've been eating, it's sort of made the weight's gone, it's all around my hips now, so I need to work on that bit next. But it's, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, as your body shape changes, and particularly when women hit menopause, that has a big, there's like a big like dump of weight around that middle bit.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, I can't wear these things anymore, you know. So it's like, well, let's look at how we can make you feel better about what you're wearing
with
that new changed shape kind of thing.
Or just come and see us and we'll sort
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Sorted. There you go. I like it.
Absolutely. And that's not a, you know, one thing I've talked about is about, you know, I'm all for body positivity, but it doesn't mean that you can't want to do anything in terms of, you know, health and fitness or, you know, changing your body if that's what you want. But it's all around about where it's coming from, isn't it? It's all around about what the,
and this,
what
the driver is. This is what sparked the plus size thing the first time I did it. I was working with a business coach who said to me, oh, you know, because basically she was saying to me, because you're fat, you should stick something like that in your marketing and you'll attract all these women who are worried about the weight and then you'll get all these customers. And that was it. That she was doing. She was like, use plus size in your marketing. And I thought, I tried it for a little bit. I think I said, because I always say like colour, clothes, confidence. And I added curves in there. And then the first week I did my pitch, you know, a networking meeting, this girl came up, she went, am I not fat enough to work with you then? It was kind of like, oh, okay. So I just thought, I let my imagery speak for itself. People can see me. They can see that, you know, I'm sort of larger than average. If that they feel that they're more attracted to work with somebody like me rather than somebody who's sort of very slim and model proportions, then that speaks for themselves. I don't need to be like waving this fatty flag, because I'm, you know, I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, I'm fat and happy, and I'm not, you know, I never want to do anything about it. I've struggled with my weight for years, you know, it's been a real issue for me. And like I say, that I, when I, at one of my sort of black dog depression day periods. It was very much, everything was about my weight. It was kind of like, if only I lost weight, I would be happy. My life would be different. Actually, no, what I needed to do was divorce my husband, you know, and everything else that was get rid of the shit job I'd got. That was essentially, you know, but my focus was all about my weight.
And,
you know, so it's tricky. It's a tricky sort of subject, but I'm not, you know, I'm not a sort of like all body positive, let's all be fat and happy, because no, not, you know, not if you're not that way inclined, but let's make you feel better about how you look, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making sense or whether.
No, totally. I think you just put the nail on the head of the hammer was the weight, and weight gain often comes from what's going on in your head. And you know, if your head's in a good place, the body normally follows. You
just absolutely.
And I think people mask over that with, let me get a new diet, let me change everything else. And actually, it's about working on you.
Absolutely. You know, and you absolutely have to be in the right space, don't you, to change, to make change with anything. You have to be ready. You know, for the first 5 years or so of my business, and trying to help people who weren't ready for change. So my business was always felt like difficult.
Yeah.
Always felt like really hard work, because I've got all these people who were happy to follow me, you know, a big Facebook group of followers, people who were really, you know, wanted everything that I could give them in terms of blogs, everything that was free. But when it came to actually investing in themselves, to pay for my workshops or to pay for that change, they weren't ready, because they didn't value themselves enough to make those changes. And that's essentially, you know, you're both pumping the air, fist pump. It's that whole, you know, we're talking about some really deep stuff, you know. This stuff is not about that superficial, or, you know, let's put some hair and let's do our hair and put some makeup on and, you know, let's all feel amazing. This is like, you know, it's sort of all tied up together, really, in about that whole feeling of self-worth and valuing yourself enough to make those changes.
You know that little monologue right there is going to go on the clip that goes out.
So yeah, you know, I've got my little affirmations here. You know, I'm choosing food that nourishes and heals me, and every mouthful is an act of self-love. You know, that's been my thing for the last 6 months, and you know, it's helped me sort of change, make different choices to lose that weight without getting all bogged down like I have done in the past. You know, getting on the scales. And I actually worked, I didn't tell you this, but I worked for Slimming World for a while, years ago.
So, I was wondering where that came, what was going, I was like,
so 20 odd years ago, 1998 it was, and I'd gone, my first diet was, I was about 17, you know, and it's like I'd chopped my right leg off now to be the size I was when I first started my first diet. And my story is that I was always probably like a stone and a half overweight of where I wanted to be. So I was backwards and forwards to Weight Watchers and Slimming World, and I did the cabbage soup diet and, you know, did all the things. And I joined Slimming World, and it was like I'd done all these other things, and it was like a revelation, because you could eat as much as you wanted, you know, it's like eat all the pasta, you know, and whatever. So I joined it, and I lost the stone and a half, and then I was trying to get out of the job that I was in. I was doing a lot of traveling, and I thought, oh, you know, I could do this, I could run this class, and you know, it might be a way out. So I signed up with them and ran classes for quite a while. Then what happened, and at the same time, it was always my go-to, you know, I stopped doing it, but it was always like, all right, I need to lose weight, I'll go back to Slimming World. And it's kind of like that whole thing, but there's only about 5% of their members actually lose the weight and keep it off, if that. So you sort of, the training was, new campaign, lapsed members, they're your first ones you go back to. And you knew every January you were going to get this massive influx of people who'd been before. And it's kind of like, yeah, all diets work while you're doing them, but the minute you go back to the same way of eating that you were doing before, but they don't train people how to, you know. So I've got a real, that's another blog in completely.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's that sort of thing. And it's kind of, no, I need to understand what's going on, and this is not, you know, this is not working. And so I've sort of ditched the whole diet club and the yo-yo dieting and the
I think you've just got yourself you can co-host a podcast after that.
Yeah.
you have a lifetime membership now. You're honorary member.
I'm brilliant.
I think I don't know about Gillian. I'm gonna have to get you on just to talk about the whole thing at some point.
Absolutely. Because, well, if anything, that's one thing that I have, you hear, and the women that we do work with, so many of them have been through Slimming World and things like that. And even now, with the government and coming out with the NHS app, and then they're recommending either Weight Watchers, Slimming World, whatever, to anyone that wants help.
The last time I went, I don't know whether it's the same where you guys are, but, you know, certainly in our area, because Slimming World head office is not that far from where I live, and in the East Midlands for a while, and I don't know whether it's still the same, you could get like free membership for the NHS, like a 12-week, we used to call them golden tickets. If you went, you know, if you went to the doctors and were like, oh, you know, I'm really not happy with my weight, I need to lose weight, they'd pop you on the scales and they'd ask you a few questions, and then they'd go, here you go to Slimming World for 12 weeks, and if you lose enough weight, you can have another 12 weeks. And it was, you know, it was like, so that whole thing, but that, you know, it's sort of that culture. And women, you know, they would come in the same clothes every week to get weighed. And, you know, if they joined in the summer, they'd still be having a summer dress on in the middle of winter because they don't want to weigh. And like not having anything to eat or drink all day, so that they weighed less, and taken off. I even had people taking earrings out before they got weighed, and taking jewellery off. No,
it's incredulous. Just like, wow.
But when you're desperate,
yeah,
cool. You're desperate, you will do that. You know, in that desperation to get on those scales on a Monday night, you know, and then it's like, whew, big sigh of relief because you've lost weight, and then like, oh great, I'm going to celebrate. I'm going to go to the chippy on the way home. And you know, that's what they do, that's what people do, you know. And it's like, how is that teaching you to manage what's going on, you know? So
And I think it's to that point then, is that it's the driving behind it, it's that, as you say, a desperation to make changes, but desperation's not the best motivation, is it? Absolutely. Really, so
you know, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a lot of, you know.
Well, to have a lot of compassion for people that are obviously in that.
Absolutely, you know, yeah, absolutely.
The right support for them either, so.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny because a friend of mine, we actually met through Slimming World, so 22 years ago, and she became a consultant as well, and we both worked together, but we sort of met up again recently. And she's still a big girl, I'm still a big, and it's kind of like we're like poster girls. But interestingly, I saw her last week, and obviously she was interested in what I was doing, because I'd lost like 30 pounds, and I've managed to keep it off for the last 6 months, and I'm quite happy and, you know, still going and whatever. And she was like, she signed up for it a few after I'd lost that, when I'd first started, she signed up for the same thing, and she's like, oh yeah, I've not done it, I'm going to go back to Slimming World because it works for me. And I'm like, but no, it doesn't, because look, you know, we've still got the weight just gone up and down for 20 years. It's not working. Please don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's what people do. And, you know, it's your job, isn't it, to educate people. And that's what your job is.
Yeah.
I'm speechless, by the way.
I can talk for all of us, Greg, in case you haven't noticed.
I was worried about what I'm going to say next. It's probably the other thing. But no.
Well,
if anyone's listening, you're hearing it directly from someone who's been there, you know, and you've been on the other side as well, Lisa, working
through it. You know, and I'm still, you know, I'm not saying I'm like cured. You know, I'm still, you know, put a packet of biscuits in front of me, and it's hard to resist. But it's that, you know, I've got years and years of one way of conditioning and thinking and eating, and you know, it's a lot to change. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm being kind to myself as well. I'm not beating myself up, because I think that's the thing, isn't it? You think, oh, I've fallen off the wagon. Oh, I'll just go and eat some chips. You know, it's kind of like, well, no, because they're going to just add to it, and then you're on this slippery slope. So, it's kind of, I'm being a lot more compassionate to myself in terms of my way of, you know, being, in terms of my eating and the emotion stuff around it. And my thing, so I mentioned earlier about my hip, my dodgy, you know, I've had a dodgy hip. I was born with my hip wasn't properly formed, so I've had lots of surgery, but they didn't find out that it wasn't properly formed until I was about 18 months old and I was walking. And so what my mum had been doing to sort of stop me crying, and I'm assuming I've been, you know, crying because I was in pain or, you know, whatever, she'd been dipping my dummy into this like rose hip syrup, and you know, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's nice. By the time I was 4, all my teeth were rotten and I had to have all my teeth out. So I've got this photograph of me when I was 4 years old. So that sugar, you know, was so, to me, that was like that was the panacea for all, you know, have some sugar, it'll make you feel better. So that's like real deep, deep rooted stuff, yeah. You know.
That's conditioning at the deepest level.
Absolutely. You know, so like I say, I'm going, okay, you know, I'm not blaming my mum. My mum was always on a diet, bless her, you know. So growing up as a teenager, you know, and when my mum died a few years ago, she's still got that. And I mean, if you could buy a diet book, my mother had it. She'd got all the DVDs, she'd got all the, you know, and she'd sit and watch them, didn't do the exercises. But, you know, you name it. And that was how I was. So from being a teenager, that was, you know, she was going to Weight Watchers. So it was kind of like, oh, that's what you do, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff, you know, baggage.
Conditioning is almost genetic. Like, it transcends genetics. It's scary. Wow.
Yeah. And I think like that, you recognize that it's about having compassion for yourself. You know, do judge ourselves, you know, judging ourselves on the food that we eat, you know, there's something bad about me. And
yeah,
you know, you're a good person or a bad person, depending on what food you eat. But
yeah, and then that goes on to, you know, with what I do, it's kind of like how you look, or, you know, and I've got clients, and I've got one client at the moment who's very, very concerned and very self-conscious about her tummy. Now, I look at it and I think, well, I can't actually see a tummy, but it's not about me, it's about her. So I have to be compassionate, you know. I can't just say to her, don't be stupid, you haven't got a tummy, because that's how she feels, you know. So yeah. It's that whole sort of thing. You've got to take into consideration where this stuff's coming from, and you're not going to change stuff overnight. So I know I'm not, whatever I say to her, she's not going to just think, well, I haven't got a tummy. Oh, because Lisa says, I haven't got a tummy. So what I have to help her do is to find clothes that she can wear, that she feels comfortable in, that are flattering for her, that she feels don't accentuate her tummy. That's my job.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about bringing it back to that person as an individual, being very mindful of what that person wants, which is what I'm sure you guys do. You know, it's about the individual rather than being that cookie cutter approach, really.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. We've gone all over today, haven't we?
I've got so many questions now. I'm like, right, this is another
Slimming World special.
I think it's such a fascinating bit, the whole psychology of the whole dieting world, and just how it invades and pervades everything we do in so many ways. And we don't really notice it until someone takes the time to talk to us about it and gets it out of our heads.
It's a biggie.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so many people will just totally resonate with that whole seeing their mums, you know, going through similar things, and it's like being around, like, I remember remember my parents doing covered soup at one point. The smell still lingers to this day. Doing those things.
You know, it's hard. It's really hard. And I, you know, my son's 20 now, and I've sort of been really, really conscious not to impose stuff that's going to give him like issues around food or whatever. I've always just let him, if he was full and there was like one mouthful left and he said he was full, I wasn't going to make him eat that mouthful. You know, it was, so I've just brought him up to understand what, you know, to make healthier choices. And you know, he enjoys sweet things and whatever, but it's in the moderation, and he knows what the, and you know, and he's absolutely fine, you know, and he enjoys going to the gym and he exercises, he eats well. I've got a stepdaughter who's 10, and that's a different kettle of fish because she's only with us a certain amount of the time. So, you know, we don't have that sort of, we don't know what she's eating the rest of the time. So we can only try and make her educate her. In terms of healthy choices, you know, and it's, she loves her sugar, she loves sweet things, she loves her carbs, and you know, if you give her a choice between mashed potato with anything, she'll eat mashed potato till it comes out of her ears. And you know, you like that as well, Greg. You know, but it's like,
yeah,
you know, she'd probably have it on a sandwich, you know. So trying to get her to eat vegetables and colourful food is our mission at the moment. So she's doing all right. She's on broccoli, carrots, sweet corn. You know, we're getting there with the colourful foods.
Good stuff.
Yeah, fantastic. So I did have one question, and I did put it on your LinkedIn this morning, didn't I? It was round about sizes. And my one question was, why men's sizes are like small, medium, large, extra large, whereas women's are in numbers?
Do you know what? I think it's, this is an educated guess. I've not done any research about this. So my only assumption is that because men don't have the same lumps and bumps variation, that you can measure a chest, and the circumference of a chest size will be this, you know, it's not like, so like with women, if you measure our chests, some of us will be a 38 and most of it be at the front and a small back. So that changes the shape of what we can wear. Or that for others, you know, I've got a friend who's a 38, you know, when you measure around for a bra, she's a 38, but her boobs are really small. She's got a very broad back. So that changes, you know, so I can only assume that it's the shape, the body shape, in terms of, because, you know, we do get some things that are small, medium and large in women's clothes, but... Yeah. And the way that blocks are cut when you have a fashion, so when you cut in a pattern, you've got fashion blocks, and then they change. So when you add the inches on, isn't uniform all over, so it doesn't go like a size 12 and then you add an inch all the way around for a size 14. The inches are added on in the places where the boobs would be and the hips would be and so on. So that's my, but I can look into that and get back to you. That's my sort of education.
No, makes sense. It just occurred to me this morning, that one. So
cool. Trousers though, we do have 32, 30, 20,
yes,
yeah,
etc. So trousers,
trousers and necks as well. So on shirts, so things that are more fitted, they do have sizes, like the neck size. So depending on how big your neck is, depends on how big. So what you do see is a lot of larger men with beer bellies and things, who, if they're wearing a shirt, the collar is miles too big. The collar's miles too big because the shirt needs to fit them around the tummy, and the sleeves are too long, and you know, it's sort of big all over. So that it's that they do go bigger all over in men's clothes by inches, whereas in women's it's only in certain bits.
Yeah, actually that's true, because my dad, I remember a couple of years ago, was it for one, I think it was my sister's wedding, it's a really big neck, and he, in order to get a shirt to fit his neck, basically it was like a tenth the rest of the shirt, just all this extra material. So that makes sense.
So I think that would be the answer.
Cool, thank you very much, fascinating.
Awesome. So have you got, I'm going to steal your question again, Julian, sorry.
You're cool.
Have you got a favourite F word?
F word? I've got a favourite one that I don't like, which is, well, not a favourite one, it's like one that I'm fighting against, and that's the frumpy. Nice. So I'll leave that one with you. Let's avoid that frumpet zone, is what I say.
I like it.
Yeah. And just to wrap up then, Lisa, is for any women that want to find out more about you, where can they find you, and have you got anything?
I have. So my website is lisanewportstyle.com. Mm-hmm. And all my links to Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram and everything are on my website. I talked about the style personality quiz earlier. That's on my website. If you go to the lisanewportstyle.com/freebies, and you can do the quiz there. That gives you sort of like your style personality archetype. If you want more detail about what that means, you need to fill in your email address, and you sort of added to my email list and you get some information. But yeah, I've got my recently launched program, which I'm hoping will become my signature program, is basically a hybrid of stuff I've done in the past, brought it all together and sort of rolled it up into a package, which is called Super Savvy Style. And there's introductory price for that until the end of August, and it's a 12-week guided program. You get all the it's kind of like my one-day workshop, but broken down into 12 little videos. So the videos are sort of 15 to 20 minutes. Once you sign up, you've got them, so you can watch those at your leisure. You log in and watch them at your leisure and as many times as you like. There's a Facebook group to support once you signed up, you're there for 12 weeks. You've got the Facebook support for 12 weeks, and I'm doing Zoom meetings, so group Zoom meetings for any questions. So it's that giving people the time to implement the learning. So if you like to binge watch, you can binge watch all the videos and then start putting it into practice, and then be going, oh, Lisa, is this right? So it's that 12 weeks support, because like I've already said, I don't do makeovers, I don't do quick fix, oh there you go and off. I like people to learn. So it gives that 12-week period, gives people the opportunity to implement that learning. And that's it's 147 quid, the introductory offer. So this is what I'm saying. So if you on average spend 50 quid a month on clothes, on average, invest that 50 quid a month with me for 3 months and you will save money.
That's an absolute steal for 147 pounds.
And I wanted it to be, because I'm doing it one to many, you know, because I'm doing it in a group situation, it means I can keep the price really accessible without undervaluing what I'm getting, you know, what you're going to get from it. Because it's like I said, this, I'm an absolute mission to get the kind of work that I do about colour and style to ordinary and inverted commas women. So it's not just about people who've got loads of money and who've got, you know, celebrity status. It's kind of like we can all benefit from learning how to dress so that we flatter our figures and feel good about ourselves. Because so it's kind of like, if I keep it at that sort of under £200 price, which is, it will be £200 come September, so you know, save yourself some money and sign up in August. But it's you know, it's so that I can get that information out there to people without breaking the bank, and it's a taster of, you know, doing the course will give you enough to make changes. Then if you want to work in more depth with me, I've got other stuff. So that's my way of sort of looking at it. So I launched it last Monday. So it's going well so far. So I've got high hopes.
That was amazing.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you, Lisa.
Gonna have you back.
It's been great. Been great chatting. Yeah. You know, you can see that you set me off. I'm very passionate about what I do, and I can't stop talking once I get going. Because
wait till we get you back on. Oh boy.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been really, really great. Thank you.
So to anyone listening, obviously review if you're on Apple, subscribe, and share this awesome episode with ladies who are gonna want some help with their styling and their clothing. So I think I feel like I could benefit from this. So I'm gonna go and look at my wardrobe.
Good for thought, isn't it? Makes you think. Absolutely. Well, thanks very much, guys. All right, see you in the next one.
See you later. Bye.